Welcome to episode 44 of The Climate Champions. I'm Lee Krivat, and each week I publish a new episode with a new climate champion as my guest. This week's guest is Paul Stith, Director of Strategy and Innovation with the Transformative Technologies team at Black & Veatch. If you or someone you know is a climate champion, please let me know at www.krivatenergyinnovations.com. Black & Veatch is an employee-owned engineering, procurement, consulting, and construction company with a 100-year legacy of innovations in sustainable infrastructure. As an innovator, collaborator, and future maker, Black & Veatch is characterized by curiosity, a trait that helps them find solutions to your most complex challenges. They want to work together with you on a better way and never stop asking, what if? Safety, sustainability, and responsibility are also ingrained into every Black & Veatch professional, and they're designed into all projects. They'd like to show you what it means to put you first. And if you want an unprecedented opportunity to connect with key stakeholders and explore what's next in the utility sector, join me at GridConnect in Washington, D.C., December 10th through 12th. I'll be recording an episode of The Climate Champions live the morning of the 10th, followed by world-class experts exploring diverse perspectives and uncovering market innovations poised to redraw the electric utility landscape. Secure your spot at GridConnect by registering now at GridConnect, that's with an X, not a C, .com. Paul is a business executive with technology, government, and e-mobility background, interested in all things green and the business models to support growth in these disruptive markets. He's an electric vehicle guru, an advocator, community organizer, promoter, speaker, consultant, business developer, alliance creator, and can take on policy, marketing, and strategy, especially when it comes to zero-emission plug-in technologies and vehicle-to-grid integration. Welcome to Climate Champions. I'm Lee Krivat. I'm in New York City, sitting with Paul Stith, Director of Strategy and Innovation with the Transformative Technologies area of Black & Veatch. Welcome to Climate Champions.
Well, Lee, thanks. I mean, just by chance, I happen to be in New York, both of us from the West Coast out here in New York. Really pleased to be invited. There's just so much going on, and I'm happy to share the work that I'm doing. Some of the things that I think are important about advancing this quicker, and it's a global thing. So let's get started.
So with regard to climate change, what was your motivating moment that made you feel you had to do something about it?
I've lived in California my whole life, fourth generation. And what I keep seeing going on in California, it actually, I got to say, started more around air quality. And it was, what are we seeing out here? And then, well, what's connected to that? And as I got a little bit deeper into it, I actually grew up in an automotive family and kind of realized, wait a minute, what's happening here? And so my deepest entree into it started in transportation. How are we going to fix it from air quality? Then I realized in many ways how it's connected to so many other things. And I would say that was kind of the moment of like, what can I do personally for this? But also, what else is out there? And how do we start to look at reversing a number of the things that are going on? There's not a moment of news items and things around the world today that don't reflect some of the impacts that are happening. And I just have taken it as a personal mission to do everything I can.
Do you remember any moment that really kicked you?
I'm going to go to transportation, and it was $5 gas. And what came about with that is the kinds of things that we're doing to our planet weren't really making sense. And it was an electric moment, I'll say. So going from $700 a month in gas to SUVs and switching over cold turkey to electrification and $70 a month in electric. And again, it was more of a deeper dive when I realized how big this really was.
I have solar on my house, and my wife and I both drive electric. So the solar makes electric free to us now that we have the solar in. So we no longer pay an electric bill for the most part, and we no longer pay for gas.
Yeah, no, in making it cleaner energy and integrating that, that is the challenge, that one of the ones that we see that's out there and come to work every day to figure that out. So yeah, clean energy has to be the source for clean transportation to make it no questions asked. This is the right way to go.
Why is mitigating climate change personal to you?
So I've got couple daughters. Makes you think about it. Makes you think a little bit about what would their kids think of what we've done. And we've got a lot of ground to make up. I've got two daughters. One of them is super into this area as well. And the more that we had dialogue about the types of things that I was working on, the more that I realized it's that next generation. And we better clean up a few things that we're doing in order to keep things on keel and hopefully get headed back into the right direction for everybody. And it's not just here, it's the generations that we're seeing around the world. My family split between here and Europe, and what the things that they're seeing there. Clearly, you want to do what we can for it.
People often talk about the next generation when I ask them, but you and I are from California, and right now California is burning. And a lot of that has to do with wind speeds, which is a result of climate change. So it's for us too.
Yeah, so I'm here. My power has been shut off. I was traveling in Asia. My power was shut off. The kinds of things that we need to do that highlights one of the themes that we've already been putting into to work on, I'm working on personally, is about resilience. And if you're going to go to electric modes of transportation, for example, or hydrogen, whatever is going to be energy intensive, and you need to have that supply during storms. We're here in New York. Hurricane Sandy did an awful lot to inform public policy and move it in the right direction around reinventing energy here. And our coast on the other side has been looking at building resilience centers and all sorts of things. So it's all connected. I think that's what I want to say is, as far as what we're seeing on the extreme, call it weather events, what we're seeing in all of the different convergences around finance and how do you keep a better grid running? How do you keep it safer? I do live in the mountains and trees fall over frequently, but we're talking about kind of a different level of enormity to the scale of what we've got to do to be sure we're in a safe situation, but also a resilient and a cleaner energy supply.
When you meet people that doubt the evidence around climate change, how do you convince them otherwise?
So many people are like, oh, it doesn't feel warmer. Well, that's not it. I think that every location is going to experience a variety of things that are just not the way it used to be. It's out of the individual perception to pull through the actual science of what's going on, because that's where I do think it goes back to. I'm looking at things and learning every single day, and of recent, it's all about ice and what is happening to the ice on this planet. What is it doing to reflect the energy back? Fortunately, we're seeing the ground when we're supposed to be seeing ice. So that'd be one of the measuring sticks that I think that people need to look at. And they also just need to look at the kinds of things that are happening to the cities that do have concurrence at the same time with the pollution. And we can get two birds with one stone if we work at this the right way.
Tell me about Black & Veatch and your role.
Sure. So Black & Veatch is first and foremost, so we're employee-owned. So each day that their professionals come to work, we're working for an organization that's committed to the work that we do. And for 105 now years, that's been around critical human infrastructure. And as the time has moved on, that has really twisted into be a really important message around a sustainable infrastructure. So the work, when I say infrastructure, it's in water, in power, and in communications. Those pillars are ones that we are working in to build, you know, enormous amount of the telecommunications infrastructure for the United States. In water, we're doing desalination plants. In power, we're doing everything from conventional assets to we're now one of the largest constructors of solar assets here in the United States. And I happen to work within our transportations group. So I'm our global SME for electrification of transportation. So what that means is I get all the tools in a toolbox from the really smart folks that are out front in the engineering and the analysis and the business cases and the assessments of what is necessary in a financial engineering front end, I would say, that's needed, all the way through to the electrical, the civil, all of the kinds of things that you need to take this, again, human critical infrastructure out into the wild. And we're talking about reservoirs and dams and hydroelectric power. We're talking, I mentioned solar, but further it's into the tunnels, the kinds of things that make cities work and societies have that access to clean water is a real simple one. Clean power is the one we're talking a bit more about today. And then communications. So building those next generation networks year over year as they evolve. We do 1,000 odd miles of fiber optics a year. We're involved in public infrastructure, community-based build-outs of broadband, many, many different things. So my work has been since I came to Black & Veatch almost 5 years ago. We started with the Tesla Supercharger network. And at that point, we've done about 150 to design, engineer, or constructed superchargers. So when you see the little lights going on, if you will, on the map, this was the group that was doing it. And I saw that, and I first like, nah, you're kidding, right? And it's like, no, that's what we do. And so my role was to come on and to bring on the next markets. So what are those? So transit, medium, heavy-duty vehicles, aviation, looking at marine, all of these modes of transport that can benefit from electrification. So I work here in the States. I'm working in Europe, particularly UK, Southeast Asia, and I support our team also in India. So we get a huge diversity of all the things we see around the world that are pushing forward, looking for solutions.
Can you talk about your prior background, how you got here?
Interesting enough, I grew up in an automotive family, so I knew everything about the sale, the preparation, and the repair, and everything you could do around automotive as a kid all the way through college. So that was a fourth generation type thing. Grew up in Northern California, but moved to the Central Coast, studied economics, studied in Cambridge, came back and looked at like, okay, I can do something more interesting faster than econ, so I did technology. For about 25 years, starting from the early days of the PCs, all the way through fully network systems and cloud computing. Always about change of technology. And then this EV bug thing struck in about 2010, which took my fancy. So it's like, this is the things we're doing. In fact, to give full credit, my wife said, we need to do something different about driving what we're doing. So we switched to electric. And I looked at that and I was like, oh, that's interesting. So I'm working in computers and servers. How do I reduce my energy? I started a group called Green OnRamp. Reduce my energy and compute power, and then transform it into transportation. And then it just kind of went from there. Worked for a few consulting, some large equipment manufacturers. They were coming to the California market, had not sold a single charger, for example. Took a couple years, a company and a startup called EV Grid. And I was their policy person in the end for all the things around vehicle to grid and vehicle grid integration. Participated in the ZEV roadmap for about 4 years. Participated in the VGI, the storage. These are the mandates, by the way, for storage were solved while I was within that organization and cheering on what you can do with batteries and vehicles. So a lot of things always about fast, rapid change and adoption. And there's nothing, you know, moving faster than the space that we're in today.
Do you have any inside knowledge about vehicle to grid, V2G?
I've got a lot of thoughts about it. And by the way, these PG&E and Southern California Edison, SDG&E outages have, not a great choice of word, but sparked a lot of conversation around what can you do with these vehicle batteries. They're just there in your home. And since 2013, through the CEC and many of my slide decks that I used to use, we talk about saving the food in your refrigerator. And that's worth roughly $300-odd, it might be. And all of a sudden, last few weeks, people in the EV space are waking up. It's not always vehicle to grid. It's vehicle to where you need critical power. And by the way, it's on mobile. By the way, it's really inexpensive because it's already been purchased for transportation. So I've got a lot of knowledge around that and certainly the interconnections and making them safe. That's the chief and foremost. But the asset and depreciating it, all of those things, I've always realized that was going to be sorted out. And we're here today, got in the garage, two Chevy Bolts. I've got 120 kilowatt hours sitting in my garage. That's a nice few days of saving our food. And in the kids' sense, by the way, you can't do their homework without Wi-Fi and internet connectivity. So it's been interesting that you look for like, well, gee, do we have to go across town? Do we have to hunt for Wi-Fi? How do you get those critical assets powered by other assets that you've got capital poured into already? So a lot of thoughts and it's transit, it's trucking, it's logistics functions, every single thing that you change over into electric. Look for resilience, look for ways to reduce the cost of energy. And those batteries or transfer from other batteries are clearly going to be part of that.
When do you think we'll have V to H, vehicle to home, or V to G?
Well, as soon as we catch up to Japan, as soon as we catch up to what's going on in China, as soon as we catch up to what's going on in London, there's 7,000-odd vehicles in Japan today that are working with the vehicle-to-grid platform over CHAdeMO, it turns out. CCS, being the DC standard here, is going to get there. The roadmaps are in place. And then whether you do it over AC or DC, and this is getting a little techie here, but it's a big issue because where is the safety device inserted between that energy and the grid and who might be working on those lines and those wires? Very similar to solar. I think it's now. And I just think it's a little bit more about who's ready. If you look at some of the current announcements, most of the modern new EV companies are proponents of vehicle to X. Rivian will have some things, as I understand it. The folks over at Lucid have announced that they'll be doing that. Most of the transit bus companies, OEMs, already have that in their product spec. So it's now, it's a little bit more about let's find the acute need for it. And by the way, in Japan, Fukushima is in fact the reasoning behind why every vehicle that's electric must export power. And that's actually hydrogen-based vehicles to generate and export, or battery-based. So there's a lot of good reasons to get going on that, and it's not the technology, it's more a matter of policy.
It's too bad that it took that to get that policy moving forward. I would rather we just do it proactively.
Absolutely. By the way, I was driving a Mini E from the BMW program, and those vehicles had an equipped bidirectional inverter on board, part of the drivetrain. So I had a vehicle in California and demonstrated that multitude of times for our Energy Commission and for others that it's viable, and it was viable many, many years ago.
One of the people on my team, Greg Haddo, he was plugging his electric guitar into his car, and he was advertising it as V2G, vehicle to guitar.
Absolutely.
It was a joke.
No.
But he did. Vehicle to guitar was a real thing.
By the way, I have colleagues this week that have been working in their garage using the batteries in their vehicles more for that little inverter and the laptop and the cell phones. But it's a tremendous resource, and you've already made those investments. And we're just talking about capitalizing on those investments.
Can you talk about setbacks that you've had?
The setbacks are related to folks that might not realize this is here now, and we have all of the technologies to accomplish our goals. So I think that might be back to that believer kind of thing, and who doesn't understand the enormity of what we face. I think the challenge is people don't understand the enormity of the opportunity and how much we already have to solve the biggest problems. You know, education always. And then certainly we've got a lot of folks that have vested interests and a lot of capital invested in the other ways of doing things. And so I think that those individuals, and if you look at the large oil companies, I'll just call and say Shell and BP and Total and others, they are seriously looking at how they transition their companies. And you look at like the likes of Daimler Trucks, you've got, again, their CEO standing up and saying the future is electric. So how do they get there? Well, they have transition timeframes, right? That others are going straight pure electric. So it's here and now, and a lot more respect for the brilliance of the engineering that has happened and the potential and opportunity of what's right around the corner to make it even that much more cost effective.
Can you talk about some successes that you've had?
Again, I've been here since 2015, and I've got, you know, I was on a panel just yesterday, and four of the clients that I've engaged with to move their initiatives forward were just sitting right there. It just so happened. And so as a big company, we get a chance to help. You know, we work with utilities, we work with vehicle OEMs, the charging networks, with cities, with transit agencies. So the successes for me would be to look around the room and take any one client that we've been engaged with and bring right to their table the ability to scale. So I talk about it. The technologies are there. We've got to get it from, you know, out of the laboratory, out onto the street, out on the roads, if we're talking about transportation, or into the microgrid, if you will, if you're talking about battery resources. So I would say a success factor is looking at how many organizations that we've helped and touched and moved their mission forward. And then over time, the other part of that would be realizing how connected it is. And not just in a localized basis. So when I go to Europe, when I go to China, when I look in Southeast Asia at that, the kind of infrastructure that our organization has built, and then it's super encouraging. And on a success matrix, you know, it just makes you kind of empowered to know that there's not really challenges we can't overcome with infrastructure. Probably somewhere fit into here, it's more about like, let's just decide to do this and get going.
My brother is an assistant principal at a pre-K through fifth grade school, and I often tell him how much I admire him because he's changing the minds of young people or educating them and giving them a chance. It sounds like there are similarities to what you're doing with your clients. You're helping to move them in a direction that will be helpful to them and the world.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, some of them are raising their hand and saying, this is what we want to do and how do we scale? And to be able to come to that environment. And the only thing that might hold some of them back could be that financial piece, could be, you know, for the capital that needs to be accumulated for that project. And we have areas and ways to assist. It could be organizations that are like, well, how do you make this more constructible? How do you make it scalable? And we work with folks that are bringing product to market. And then when something is absolutely ready and beyond pilot, ready to scale, where do you want to go now? In Canada, we're licensed in all jurisdictions to move these things forward faster. Take what's an idea and make it something really formidable as far as progress.
Can you talk about your vision for the future? How do you see the world shaping up in the next 20 to 40 years?
So I'll just kind of take a little tour of like some of the mandates that we see around the world that I hope are already solved and effectively in place. So if you go to Norway, you go to what's going on in the UK, if you go to what I just witnessed in China, some of the progress that's there, the fundamentals are there for by 2030, 2025 in some cases, 2048 in Hawaii. So there's marks in the ground in California, 2040, all transit buses must be electric or zero emission. When we get there, I actually hope we've done it sooner. So we're sitting around in a short 10 years from now, and we're looking back and like, oh, gosh, why didn't we start it a little bit sooner to have been done even sooner? So I think there'll be some surprises. And I think that the ones that will also be surprises might be the laggards. Looking back and saying like, look, how can we have moved this forward faster? I was at a super well-attended, nice event in San Francisco recently. And what we were also talking about is that 2030, 2040 vision, right? And it was all about like, okay, if we're not going to decarbonize, then where are we going to actually sequester? Which countries are going to step up and do all of the kinds of things they need to do to get their part of the bargain of being a human, you know, existence on the planet? And so I think that everything coming from a renewable source certainly is a noble goal. Everything that could come and be deploying clean energy towards the things that we need to do. And by the way, transportation is pretty important, but look at building heat. Look at the things that are just at the earlier stages of like, how do we do this? In that time frame, I want to see that we're on a great track to be net zero. And I think there's an incredible amount of work that still needs to be done around all of these things. And I also want to say that we've done it hopefully in a smart way as opposed to how we've deployed capital, so that we're not being wasteful of really important assets, which are the funding sources to do these things. I might be a little bit too optimistic, but I do feel that there should be market forces as this goes forward that will kind of correct course. Not going to get it right every single time, but it's going to be a pretty good place to be in a short amount of time. Not bad here, but we're getting better.
I don't imagine that there's only going to be one solution. I think that you'll have biomethane, so you'll still be able to have fuels like that. You'll have renewable energy like solar and wind. You might have nuclear in the picture if they make it safe and secure. And at the same time, we need ways to sequester carbon because we've got a ton out there. And just the amount out there is way too much. So we need to bring it back somehow.
Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, you know, so well, what is that? Is that, you know, I'm sitting looking around as a nice view of New York here, right? How do we make concrete? Do we find a carbon capture methodology that goes out to like the building that's going on? And again, I was in Asia seeing the number of buildings that are being constructed. So the way we do things just got to do some course corrections. And I think that by and large, the technology pieces are going to be those enablers, and the policies surrounding them clearly need to get into place. And I'm a big fan of something that I think is a reality, is that the cleaner, greener, sustainable ways of doing things can also have a very strong economic ROI, and that the companies that are kind of leading that charge, you can see them out in the market. They're pleasing their boards and shareholders by the incremental progress they're making in an image, but the bottom line of buying energy that's cheaper and doing it in ways that benefit their customer base, benefit their employees, it's great to see that kind of momentum that will keep propelling us forward.
I'll make a little plug for my interview with Howard Newman. He helped launch the Salk Institute in San Diego in its journey toward harnessing plants to sequester more carbon, which is super exciting. So I really hope that technology comes through, because it just seems to me like we're just leveraging plants, doing what they already do to help us solve our problems.
Yeah, I'll toss something in. So I attended an event last year, and not really a plug. I hope to go back again, but it's called Data Space. It was all the premise around how we're going to transport people and goods to Mars and how they're going to survive in that environment. And everything that you might do for this world in order to get to that world could really turn out to be really important things. So food, water, energy. How are you going to do those things in a place that doesn't have any of them today, particularly accessible, and think pretty hard about that? Now, our teams, we've got some great stuff going on, like Next Gen Agriculture is an entire group within Black & Veatch right now. How do you do more sustainable urban production of food? I mean, there's stuff that just like comes out like, well, what do you need? Power, clean water, and logistics functions. And all of a sudden you have a new marketplace that can take on one of those things. And these guys for Mars, I mean, they're going to plant some little something. It'll become like dinner in a Petri dish. So it'll be really interesting to see where it turns out.
Do you have any questions for me?
Go back a few years in your utility days. Okay. I've got some ideas, and we're trying to help with regard to the utilities and what they can do to move this forward faster. We just put out, I did a lot of work helping the Smart Electric Power Alliance do a guide for preparing for the electric future to a utility. So as being a utility individual and professional, and now what you're doing now, where do you see a utility's role, and how can they get after this?
Every utility is different. It really depends on how they make their money and what drives them, what their objectives are. I think for a lot of utilities, they welcome any project that will help them put iron in the ground, because they'll make money off of that. They just need to align it with the commission's desires, and they're going to try to push those types of projects.
And fair enough, I know there's a lot of energy on all sides of each utility decision. So we work with utilities, of course, as well. I think they're instrumental. But I also want to find ways that you can bring the private capital in to those environments. So each time that I look at that, I'm looking for, okay, great, we're going to have this input from a shareholder environment, or we're going to have it from a municipal or a co-op, which those are like the community's effective assets, right? How do you take those, multiply them by the gains that you might see in, say, a logistics market, so that the utility makes some investment, absolutely, as well as the private sector comes to it. And we're sitting in New York, by the way, so I've been having a lot of discussions with financiers. And when is this bankable? You know, when can you actually take that and move it forward? So glad you could answer on the utility side.
I do think there's potential for the utilities to be tapped to invest money to bring a more carbon-free future to us faster, because they have the money. They have the capital, they have access to the capital, they have low interest rates they need to pay, they make money based on it, they have the model, they have the people, they know how to leverage contractors to come to bear quickly to get projects done. So I do think that could really potentially help them. But there's always the question about, why is it the utility that gets to invest the capital? There are some things that only the utility can guarantee, the safety and the reliability, but you may look to others that want to invest that money and have a chance at that business. So I do think there are questions about the future of utilities and in places where they can grow or maybe even shrink. The future is unknown in this regard.
Got it. I'm going to try one more, and this is an area that I'm working in, so I want to get your take on it. So I've been working in electric aviation now for the infrastructure side and watching the vehicles for about 2.5 years already. So again, I try to do the crazy fun things out front. What's your thought of flying electric from here to JFK and doing it within, say, 3 years from now, autonomously?
When you say from here, do you mean?
The top of this building, for example.
A few years ago, I did some research into a couple of companies that had one-person Ubers. They land on roofs, they have the capabilities of a helicopter to go up and down, but they also have the capability to tilt their wings and go forward very quickly. And they felt that within a few years, they could, on electric, be able to make a trip from San Francisco to LA and be able to complete that in a much faster time than anything else we know today, and do it at a very reasonable cost. So I believe it's possible, and I think we are going to get there. I think we always are aggressive about the time frame. So I don't know when, but I do think that technology is on the roadmap.
Excellent. The fear factor, by the way, of flying autonomously, no driver allowed.
Well, I'm not doing it, but it will be available.
Okay. Great. Yeah, and this is something, and it's keen interest of mine. You know, New York, clearly we're watching all of the helicopters. You've got the modeling of that going on today, connecting ground resources to air resources back to ground. Regional air networks looking at conventional takeoff with wings, typically a runway and vertical takeoff landing. The beauty of that particular market from our company's point of view, of course, is looking at, in mind as well, the infrastructure is extremely similar to what we need for transit. So as we're looking at and learning about how do you build high power networks, you know, and we're working throughout there, like Tesla's one client, Electrify America, we're building like 24 states worth of their infrastructure today. So super similar. All you've got to do is just get the vehicles ready, get them certified, and have the permission of the cities to land. And so we do see these things coming and have many, many conversations. So I look forward, I guess, to come back and we'll have got from JFK to here in about 8 minutes.
Yes. Do you have anything else you want to add?
Yeah. I mean, I guess just a statement of optimism again, that we can do this. We just have to get ourselves out of the way in order to get where we want to go. If you look at things like the subway, you look at light rail, you look at these like really expensive types of things that society has decided to do. We're talking about things that may not be that expensive. So let's just prioritize and get going on some things. And the beauty in the commercial side, of course, is optimism is high. It's going to be cheaper anyway. So we're talking about fiscal, financial sustainability at the same time. So I want to make sure that's crossed. If you don't get across that line, you're going to always be paying for these advances. And I would look at it, upside is that the advances in sustainability will pay for the sustainability.
Excellent. So with that, I'm going to wrap this up and I'm going to do it with a wrap. When it comes to EVs, his wife couldn't pass because she saw $5 gas. In California, he's fourth generation. He's passionate for transportation electrification. He's from an automotive family, but he switched from gas to an EV. Soon we'll see V to HMV to G, partly due to outages at PG&E. Legacy companies have to transition from oil and gas with a sustainable mission. When companies are changing and don't want to fail, they use Black & Veatch when they need to scale. At a Mars-focused conference called Beta Space, they could provide solutions here for the human race. We soon may be autonomously traveling on an EV plane, but Paul's going before me because that's insane. Unlike Star Wars Sith, he's not a myth. He's Black and Black and Black and Veatch's Paul Stith.
Nice. That's better than a Wordle.
A what?
A Wordle. You know, the thing when you do it, you put a bunch of words in, and then it the bigger the letters of the whatever.
Yeah. I was just called better than a Wordle.
Yeah. Nice. Well, thank you.
You might have scoffed at getting into an early version of the one-person autonomous electric helicopter Uber vehicle, but I do think it has the potential to help change the world, especially with regard to traffic. It certainly helps challenge the car ownership model. If you have comments or questions about the podcast, visit my website at www.crevatenergyinnovations.com and drop me an email. I would love to hear from you. And if you're enjoying the Climate Champions podcast series, please subscribe, rate it 5 stars if you're an Apple user, and tell your climate-concerned friends about it. And if you're in San Diego and you want to trade your concern about climate change for a few hours of some great laughs, most weekends I'm doing improv comedy at either the Old Town Improv Company or Finest City Improv or both. Contact me to confirm specific show dates. And if you want to release from some of life's stress or just to improve your speaking skills, consider taking a workshop at an improv club in your town. While Paul has a wealth of experience and knowledge across numerous domains, his focus now is on strategic consulting execution planning, engineering design and construction for distributed energy storage, high-power, high-capacity electric vehicle charging facilities along corridors, urban cores that serve consumers, light-duty, medium-duty, and heavy-duty fleets, transit, and autonomous vehicles, both ground and aviation. His clients include charging networks, vehicle OEMs, utilities, government, equipment and software OEMs, energy providers, investors, and developers. And if you're into electric vehicles, join his LinkedIn group, Electric Vehicle Business and Career Network. Paul's efforts to scale EVs and the EV charging infrastructure is a critical activity to help mitigate climate change.